The song we just heard offers a rather optimistic view of the impact of emotional intelligence on behavior, especially with the line about world harmony, given the way things are today. However, it does provide a lead-in to the talk this morning. Many times in my life, hopefully less often these days, I found myself flooded with an emotional response to some situation, a negative comment or a personal attack or a joyful surprise. Now, in the case of a positive emotion, I can just let it flow. But in the case of a negative comment or attack, my first reaction would be a flight or fight, wanting either to get away from the situation or to strike back. I've had to learn, and I continue to learn, to hit the pause button, to let my thinking mind take over from the feeling mind, in order to avoid acting impulsively on emotional triggers. Now, as Evelyn Whitehead puts it, bad feelings make us miserable, but they often come bearing gifts. A negative emotion's gift sometimes comes in the self-examination it provokes. Now, I'm not always successful with that pause for self-awareness and reflection, though certainly much better than I used to be. Now, Daniel Goleman puts it this way: in a very real sense, we have two minds, one that thinks and one that feels. Now, in 1995, Daniel Goleman wrote his groundbreaking book, Emotional Intelligence. And early on in the book, he begins by listing basic emotions such as anger, sadness, fear, enjoyment, love, surprise, disgust, shame. Now, similar lists have been developed by many others, of course. But Goleman goes on to describe the process of the emotional versus rational response, determining whether our feeling mind or thinking mind is going to be dominant. A signal, whether it's sight or sound or smell or taste or touch, first goes to the thalamus, where it is translated into the language of the brain. Most of the message then goes to the particular cortex, where it's analyzed and assessed for meaning and appropriate response. If that emotion response is emotional, a signal goes to the amygdala to activate the emotional centers. But a smaller portion of the original signal goes direct from the thalamus to the amygdala in a quicker transmission that allows a faster but much less precise response. Thus, the amygdala can trigger an emotional response even before the cortical centers have fully understood what is happening. I expect most of us have experienced this, both in ourselves and in others. First come feelings, then come thoughts. Emotional intelligence is the process of understanding and learning to deal effectively with this duality. Emotional intelligence is the ability to recognize your own emotions, understand your own emotions, understand the impact they have on your thinking and on your behavior, and understand as well how your emotions impact the thinking, feeling, and behaviors of others. Emotional intelligence is being able to not just understand all of this, but also to manage it for more productive outcomes. Daniel Goleman again, For better or worse, intelligence can come to nothing when the emotions hold sway. In a sermon on emotional intelligence by Reverend Peter Connolly, he writes, "We're all familiar with the concept of IQ, the intelligence quotient, used to measure intellectual capacity. IQ is an important indicator of some kinds of abilities, but is certainly incomplete in and of itself. We are more than our intellects. Our ability to form and maintain relationships is an important factor in leading a successful life. If we cannot feel emotions, we won't be able to achieve happiness. If we're unable to manage our emotions, likewise, we will not be able to lead a stable, well-integrated life." Now, Goleman lists five categories or elements that make up emotional intelligence. And this was based on work by Yale psychologist Peter Salovey from in 1990. Knowing one's emotions, managing emotions, motivating oneself, recognizing emotions in others, and handling relationships. Michael Akers and Grover Porter in 2020 update that list a bit, and they list them as self-awareness, self-regulation, motivation, empathy, and social skills. So knowing your emotions or self-awareness means recognizing a feeling as it happens. You might think that we all know our emotions as they occur. That's not true. The amygdala can override our ability to think clearly. If we don't recognize our emotions, they dictate our actions. And that's not good in trying to form and maintain relationships. And it's not good for our health either. Now, managing the emotions or self-regulation is handling the emotions so that they are appropriate to the situation. If you can't handle them, they will handle you, and you'll get worn out from fighting them. You'll be constantly battling depression or anger or irritability. Now, there are ways, of course, to handle the emotions. I'll suggest a couple of them later. Motivating yourself, motivation, involves organizing your emotions in service to a goal. You delay gratification and you stifle impulsiveness. Recognizing emotion in others or empathy. It's amazing how difficult that is when you are completely caught up in your own unorganized or disorganized emotions. You can't have empathy towards someone else if you can't escape your own emotional unrest long enough to pay attention to the signs that others give off of their own emotional state. And handling relationships or social skills means handling the emotions of others, either by not reacting to them or by empathy. Handling a relationship means helping someone else manage their emotions by not contributing to their emotional reactivity. However, it does not mean that you take responsibility for the other person's emotions. So a bit of a lecture there. Daniel Goleman sums all this up neatly. If your emotional abilities aren't in hand, if you don't have self-awareness, if you're not able to manage your distressing emotions, if you can't have empathy and have effective relationships, then no matter how smart you are, you're not going to get very far. For better or worse, intelligence can come to nothing when the emotions hold sway. Now, we see this everywhere. It's probably most particularly in personal relationships, but also in the workplace, in faith communities, and in dealing with our health. Now, the family is really at the heart of developing emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence, or EI, begins to develop in the earliest years. All the small exchanges children have with their parents, teachers, and with each other carry emotional messages. So childhood is the time when learning EI is easiest and strongest. Certainly, trauma in childhood and later will impact a person's ability to deal with emotions. Now, emotional relearning is possible, and depending on the length and degree of trauma, this relearning may require a good deal of effort and support. As Unitarian Universalists, I can certainly relate the question of EI or EQ to our UU principles, where we covenant to affirm and promote the worth and dignity of every person, and justice, equity, and compassion in human relationships. So, certainly developing our emotional intelligence is one of the ways that we to help us live our principles. But developing emotional intelligence is helpful for everyone in their relationships. I want to suggest a couple of approaches that may offer help in enhancing our EI or EQ. I'm sure that I know that many of you have other approaches as well. Daniel Goleman writes, Socrates' injunction, know thyself, speaks to the keystone of emotional intelligence, awareness of one's own feelings as they occur. And this leads me to the first of the tools I want to propose for developing emotional intelligence. Mindfulness is a practice that arises out of Eastern teachings. In my case, it was Buddhist teachings. A goal of mindfulness is to be completely in the present, so that you take in whatever is happening, whether positive or negative, but you're not taken over by it. You experience an emotion, but aren't controlled by it. And you let it arise and pass away. This self-awareness or mindfulness allows time for the thinking mind to assess the situation, and thus permitting an appropriate rational response. Now, the benefits of mindfulness are enhanced as well by the practice of meditating on loving kindness, a meditation that begins with ourselves and gradually extends out to all sentient beings. And this is a practice that can also help us to affirm and promote the interdependent web of all existence. Again, in his book on emotional intelligence, Goleman suggested that emotional intelligence, skills such as active listening, reciprocity, empathy, use of dialogue, and openness, can help create the conditions necessary for compassionate communication. Here at LUF, we've had an ongoing involvement with nonviolent or compassionate communication, an approach developed by Marshall Rosenberg in his book, Nonviolent Communication, A Language of Life. He provides a comprehensive method to promote compassionate communication or reflective dialogue. An NVC is based on the following four steps: observations, feelings, needs, and requests. Rosenberg outlines the NVC process. the concrete actions we observe that affect our well-being. How we feel in relation to what we observe, the needs, values, desires, etc., that create our feelings, and the concrete actions we request in order to enrich our lives. Now, initially, the process may seem complicated. I know it did to me, but its application of emotional intelligence can lead to healthier and more meaningful relationships. And LUF does have a practice group that currently meets on Zoom. I know there are people here today who can tell you a lot more about this, or you can contact the office for more details. So developing our emotional intelligence is something that can make all aspects of our lives and our relationships easier and more productive. I want to end with a quotation from Jed Thompson. We all have the same palette of emotional paints. It's how we pigment them on the canvas of life that dictates our artistry.